From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the old Spanish missions of San Antonio, 300 years of history, community memory, and meaning.
They are meaningful spiritual places.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Driving through San Antonio's south side, it can be breathtaking to suddenly come across the Spanish missions, Concepcion, San Jose, San Juan, and Espada. To see them jutting out of the urban landscape, you are immediately confronted by the weight of history and the excitement of beauty. Stone walls, archways, sacred spaces, robust with meaning. It might appear like a postcard image, but for more than 300 years, these places have never been static. They are a dynamic part of the Texas origin story, instruments of empire, conquest, anchors of community life, spirituality, symbols of pride, but also sources of pain. The Alamo City has grown around them, but so has the debate over what they represent. The new book, San Antonio and Its Missions, Three Centuries of History, Memory, and Heritage, traces not just how the missions were built, but also how they have been used, abandoned, reused, and reinterpreted by church leaders, local families, preservationists, tourists, tribal communities, and generations trying to make sense of the past. Joel Daniel Kitchens is the author of San Antonio and Its Missions.
To start out with, you have to go back to the Spanish government moving up, sending its conquistadors into what is now the American Southwest. Part of this drive was to establish territorial claims. They set up a series of missions in what is now East Texas, but the Spanish crown had not really established any ports along the what is now the Texas Gulf Coast. So supplying these missions in East Texas was a journey of over 300 leagues from these Spanish outposts on the Rio Grande. And this territory that they had to cross, it was not nice, safe territory. There were bands of people who did not necessarily want the Spanish there. Some of these supply trains were not always successful in restocking and in helping resupply these East Texas missions. So finally, they decided we needed a way station, one reconnaissance mission. They had come across an area close to what is now San Pedro Springs, and they said, hey, this looks like a nice place to build a way station here. So it started out as a way station between the Rio Grande and the East Texas missions. And it started with Mission San Antonio de Valero in 1718. And then right shortly after that was founded, the Presidio was also founded. Spanish soldiers to help protect the missions.
The missions they had in East Texas failed, and they were relocated to the San Antonio area?
Yes. The missions in East Texas were not as successful. The Cato, they were a settled tribe. They had their own agriculture. They really didn't need any of what the Spanish were offering in terms of protection. They would like the trade with the Spanish, but it was not something that would really benefit them so much that it was worth giving up their culture and religion for. So the Cato didn't join the missions. But then the French were starting to make incursions from what is now Louisiana. The Spanish did not have enough people there to hold that territory. So they, in 1730-31, they pulled back, they withdrew those missions and reestablished them in San Antonio. And that's one reason why San Antonio is the home. It's the largest concentration of Spanish colonial architecture in the country.
So there are five Spanish missions in the San Antonio area.
There are five Spanish missions in the San Antonio, in San Antonio. That's correct.
And four of them are national parks. One of them, the Alamo, isn't.
Right.
It's really kind of hard to kind of talk about them all, and it seems like the Alamo always sticks out. The Valero.
You are so right. It really was a challenge especially because San Antonio de Valero, what we now know as the Alamo, that was the first mission. How am I going to talk about these other missions without talking about the first one? And I didn't want to write just another, Me Too Alamo book, because it really was, I thought the story really was about all of the missions.
The book seems to be about how the missions have been perceived over the last 300 years. Starting off as what we'd heard about earlier, the mission of the missions.
Yes.
And then, since they're 300 years old, so they've been old a long time.
Exactly, yes.
They have changed. They have gone through different stages.
That's right. In the late 1700s and the early 1800s, the missions were secularized. The Spanish crown really decided they didn't want to be in the mission business. They had been subsidizing the missions for really ever since the inception. They decided that it was time that the missions moved on. Or
the Franciscan friars.
Yes, the Franciscan friars. One of the, I guess, lessons or take-home messages, if I think a lot of people forget about the missions, is that they were supposed to be temporary. They were only supposed to be there for 10 years as missions. They thought 10 years would be sufficient to teach the indigenous, or the Native Americans, the Coahuiltecans, how to be good Spanish subjects, how to be good Catholic Christians, and how to be farmers, and would teach them animal husbandry and basic trades to make it to be a village, a viable village on the frontier. And then the missionaries were, the Franciscans were supposed to turn everything over to the village, to the Native Americans. It is now a Spanish village, and they were going to move further into the frontier to start this whole process anew and claim more territory for Spain. Finally, in the late 1700s, early 1800s, the Spanish government said, "No, we're done with this. You need to close up shop, move on." They started a process called secularization and gave the and turned the property over to the diocese, establish these as local churches that would be self-supporting. The church did not have enough, really supply enough priests to take the place of the missionaries and make this work. So they sat idle for a while. Now, the Alamo, being closest to the town, the village of San Fernando de Bear, which we now know as San Antonio, it still had some of its fortifications, so it became a, when it ceased to be a religious edifice, it became sort of a fort for a company of Spanish, then Mexican cavalry.
Right, before the Battle of the Alamo.
It
was occupied by Davy Crockett and all the Texas defenders of the Alamo. It was actually a fort that was used by Mexican forces that were defeated by Jim Bowie and company.
That's correct.
So it changed hands multiple times.
They did, yes.
So this was a time when we saw this, the process of the missions becoming the ruins of the missions.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And it was
the
ruins of the missions really captured the imagination of pretty much everyone. I mean, anyone who came through San Antonio gushed about their beauty.
Yes, and that was one of the things that I found surprising, but also kind of it kind of vindicated something that I had believed, that a lot of the mission literature was saying, oh yeah, the missions, after they were secularized, they were forgotten about. Nobody cared about them. They left to ruins. And I was finding, no, they were not forgotten about. People knew they were there. They took their out-of-town friends to the missions to show them off. And you're right. people who visited the missions, some of whom were dignitaries or well-known people of the time, came in and wrote some rather glowing purple prose in praise of the missions and their beauty, and really fired the imagination, the romantic imagination.
But I don't want to forget about the fact that throughout all these years, the missions have continued to be functioning churches. There have been parish churches.
Not consistently, but yes, they were not their own parish, but they were sometimes classified as a visitation. One of the priests at San Fernando Cathedral would go out on a regular basis to the missions, hold mass.
But and these were still on the outskirts of what was then San Antonio.
That's right.
Down the San Antonio River.
Yes, they were all along the river. They were about 3 miles apart. It was a place out in the hinterlands.
Sidney Lanier, the poet of the Confederacy.
Yes.
Why was he so significant in trying to promote the idea of these missions as things of beauty?
Sidney Lanier had contracted tuberculosis when he was in a Union Army prison camp during the Civil War. In the post-war period, San Antonio saw a lot of people coming in looking to its more arid climate, arid as opposed to other parts of the Deep South. The town marketed itself a place for curing people with tuberculosis. So he came down to San Antonio to try to cure his tuberculosis. And of course, being a writer, he started describing the sights that he saw. And he was very complimentary. Again, it was very romantic in its descriptions. He uses the phrase, there are a few things better than to go out to the missions on some soft Sunday morning and hear the mass being sung in the missions.
So as the years tick off, the missions fall further and further into ruin.
They do, yeah. Some historians have suggested, and I think there's something to it, that the fact that the missions looked in ruinous condition actually enhanced their romantic appeal. It enhanced their status. It enhanced the appeal to the tourist, especially when groups, the See America First crowd, started trying to really became influential in the late 19th, early 20th century in promoting America as a place that was culturally and worthwhile. Instead of going on the grand tour to Europe, people needed to stay here, spend your money here, see America. And Europe has castles. We have these old churches down in San Antonio that are, you know, they're every bit as beautiful as the old cathedrals of Europe. It worked.
What were people thinking about these buildings? Of course, they knew the history that these were the old Spanish missions, that they weren't shrouded in mystery. But we had a mixed feelings about Spain, about Mexico. We pretty much were still ruled by the white myth here in Texas. Did that cast a shadow over efforts to try to restore? I mean, there was a lot of anti-Catholic sentiment as well. Anything out there that kind of diminished these sites?
Yes. It was there. The anti-Catholic sentiment was definitely there. On the other hand, it was seen by many writers as dead and gone. It is a dead past. These are reminders of a dead past that the white Protestants who came in and mastered and took over and built a new American empire built on the ruins of the old corrupt Spanish past. But again, the white Protestants had taken over and were redeeming the land that these inferiors held.
But then we go into the mission revival era, because there were people who were content to see the missions just further and further degrade. And yeah, they're beautiful and whatever, but we're not going to invest anything in order to restore them and preserve them. But then that changed. So what happened?
It changed. Part of it was actually prior to the Civil War, when some of the Catholic bishops said, hey, we could reuse some of these facilities and we need to. They did try to, they had a little bit of success in rebuilding some of the churches and putting them back, make them more useful than what they were. But the other part was the DRT, the Daughters of the Republic of Texas, and Adina de Zavala, who was not content to see the missions, or especially one mission in particular, the Alamo, degrade any further than it had been. You see, it's one of the things that when outsiders would come in and visit the missions and gush about how beautiful they were, they also would remark on how pathetic it was that the city and the state was letting these wonderful buildings just disintegrate. They were saying something should be done. And especially in the case of the Alamo, which took on really a life of its own with Adina de Zavala as one of part of the driving force, she stirred up, she opened people's eyes and started making people care about the status of these old buildings, starting with the Alamo.
Well, you write about that there was a rift within the DRT. There was the Zavala faction and there was the Drisco faction fighting over who was the actual DRT. She locked herself in the Long Barracks in order to prevent its destruction. And she stayed in there in a rat-infested cold quarters for days till something could be done to preserve it.
Yes. She locked herself in the Long Barracks for 3 days to keep the sheriff from giving it over to the Driscoll faction. And finally, the governor sent in someone to mediate between the two parties. It gets kind of interesting that Governor Colquitt said he would not do anything to mess or to destroy the Alamo. And for de Zavala, the Alamo was the whole compound. This is the source. This was the bone of contention between the de Zavala faction and the Driscoll faction. Was for de Zavala, the whole compound was the Alamo. For Driscoll, the Alamo was just the chapel. Everything else was secondary and expendable. For de Zavala, she believed that the Long Barracks was actually where some of the worst fighting took place, and so it was in danger, and so she locked herself in there for 3 days. At one time, some of her friends were sneaking food to her through a window, but then the sheriff realized this and put a deputy there to keep that from happening. So after 3 days, they negotiated the sort of a settlement. Colquitt said he would not do anything to mess with it. But then later, he was out of state on a business trip. The Driscoll faction got the certain people in the city administration to come in and knock down, or take out the top story of the Long Barracks. In that respect, de Zavala lost in court. She lost control of the DRT, and then she lost part of the Alamo.
But she's remembered in history as an incredible person.
She was a force of nature. She was a fantastic believer in Texas and in San Antonio and in the Alamo story. She is remembered as one of the saviors of the Alamo.
We get into a different era. There's a new generation that sees these historic sites as something special.
Especially after the Second World War. You have, on one hand, the working class Americans start getting more vacation, and you also have more people buying cars. Whereas before World War II, a lot of the advertising and promoting of the missions was done, say, by Southern Pacific Railroad. And they ran the first railroad line through San Antonio. And they spent millions hyping their tourism, promoting San Antonio and other cities along the way.
Now, you definitely take a look at how coming of the rail to San Antonio changed things.
because that changed everything. When the railroads came to San Antonio in 1877, it connected the city to a nationwide network, and it brought a lot more people through the city. And as the trains stopped at the city, people started looking around, and the Southern Pacific started promoting and the city started promoting itself as well as a really nice place to stop off and for your ultra rich to spend the winter season. And some of these rail advertisements showed people dining al fresco in January, whereas their friends in Chicago and New York and all these other places would still be freezing. They were outside. They were playing golf. They were doing things like visiting these old missions. Aren't you sad you're not here with them?
Walt Disney and Westerns, they get hold of these historic sites. They make them superstars.
Walt Disney had wanted, after World War II, Walt Disney had really wanted to hype the some American myths. He did a story of Davy Crockett, recruited this fresh young face, Fess Parker, and they did a TV series on Davy Crockett. And in 1955, and wow, people were just, especially kids, were just blown away. They thought it was this was the greatest thing. The Disney pantheon of heroes had a new hero in Davy Crockett.
But still not rooted in 100% fact, taking some liberties for the cinematic appeal.
They took a lot of liberties. Part of the problem was that as they were putting the things together, as they were writing the script, they discovered that there was not a lot of real hard factual information about Crockett that was easy to find. So they let the storytelling go take precedence over historical fact.
There comes a time, though, when the missions become a national park. President Jimmy Carter signs it that they will become national parks. It was controversial at the time, because there was a lot of concern about the separation of church and state and whether this was going to violate that. And he had to thread a needle, take a political chance in making that decision.
And even then, he signed the law to allow it to become a joint venture between the National Park Service and the Archdiocese of San Antonio. But then they didn't fund it very well. There was a holdup in the funding, and for a while that was despaired of. But then they finally released the funding, and it became part of the National Park Service.
So the missions, what do they stand for now? I mean, when people go see them, it means something. But what is it? And I guess it means different things to different people. But apparently, you know, the fact that these, you know, are some of the oldest structures, you know, certainly in Texas. What do we need to make of that?
One of my primary arguments in the book is that the missions are sites of memory, and I use the definition of a French historian, Pierre Nora, that these are the any significant entity, whether material or non-material in nature, by the dint of human will or the work of time, they have become a symbolic element of the memorial heritage of any community. So they are part and parcel, they are fundamental parts of the San Antonio community because of the Alamo. And because the Alamo has been nationalized.
And venerated.
Venerated nationwide, worldwide. It has also become such an important part of our cultural heritage that I feel these are very special places that need to be preserved for future generations.
But preserve, and we do storytelling What is the story that gets told? Do we still talk about the native peoples who actually did the work to build these structures and who they were built for?
I hope so. Yes. I think their story is, again, it's fundamental, it's foundational to understanding the missions, especially in the modern era, as there are a couple of groups of people in and around San Antonio who claim to be descendants of the original Coahuiltecan peoples. And as such, these missions represent a home. You see, the Coahuiltecans back in the 18th century, they were nomadic. And so they followed the season, followed the food sources all around Texas. But once they joined the missions, they became situated. They became part of this community. And now in the modern day, we have folks who are reconnecting with that past. And so the missions offer them a place to reconnect with their past. The missions are also, now they have gone back to being active Catholic parishes, except for the Alamo. But as active Catholic parishes, that you have populations who come in for quinceañeras, they come in for weddings, they come in for funerals, they have their children baptized there at the missions.
Sure. Day of the Dead celebrations, all sorts.
Day of the Dead, yes, they are meaningful spiritual places.
Is the future secure for these sites?
You have to be careful. The government giveth and the government can taketh away.
And what do they want in exchange?
Yes, that's a very good question. I would like to think that the money being spent on the Alamo is going to help secure it for the time being and hopefully for the future. But as somebody as a priest in the book, I quote, says, a 300-year-old building is never finished. So there is always going to be something that needs to be done for these buildings, whether it is to insulate them against the rising damp, which the moisture being absorbed from the ground that dissolves some of the structural, the limestone that they're built out of, to fortifying them against some of the traffic patterns in Alamo Square. And I think this is part of the reason why they have now closed Alamo Square, is to keep the rumble of trucks from shaking it to pieces. I hope the funding will be there when it's needed, both for the Alamo as well as the National Park missions, because these places are very special and need to be preserved.
Joel Daniel Kitchens is the author of San Antonio and Its Missions, Three Centuries of History, Memory, and Heritage. It's published by Texas A&M University Press. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. You can find past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org, and you can download Texas Matters wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.